Introducing the Two-Way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the Two-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the Two-Way for yourself at NewBalance.com.
Hey Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCfootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans. Welcome to the Peristyle Podcast on a Monday. And today we're going to talk with the coach, Harvey Hyde, about the what potentially is the last weekender for USC fans for quite a while. Trojans going up to Berkeley, taking on the California Golden Bears and getting a 50-49 win. A lot of weird stuff happened in that game. We're going to talk to the coach all about it. You can follow him on Twitter at Coach Harvey Hyde or go to his website, harveyhyde.com, for all of his content. And we have a lot of questions we need to get to. If you have questions for any of our shows, please be specific in the when you send in the subject who the show is for. And just say, hey, who the question is for, which show. podcast@uscfootball.com is the email address. And we got a lot of questions for Coach Hyde today. And you can also call or text us at 424-254-9141. We got some voicemails to get to as well. And if you, wherever you listen to the podcast, we do appreciate that. But if you have the Apple Podcasting app, like on your iPhone, just go over there, take a minute, and leave us a five-star review. We haven't had one for a little while, so we would really appreciate some reviews over there. Say hi, whatever you want to do. Any kind of feedback or comments for the show, we do appreciate it. You leave more reviews. It does help to grow the show. And I got to talk with the coach right now because it was a weird, weird game from the very beginning, right before the coin toss. Got a protest. Got a weird halftime thing. I've never seen anything like that before. And, of course, the coming down to a defensive play for USC right at the end and securing a one-point win. But, Coach, welcome in, and thanks for sharing all your thoughts with on the game today. How you doing, man?
Well, thank you. I want to welcome everyone. Wasn't it nice to have an afternoon game? Wasn't it nice to be able to watch a good afternoon football game and still have the rest of the day to watch more football? But again, I want to welcome all of you. And again, I look forward to being with you again as we are every Monday. And again, I always say at the beginning of our podcast, it's just our opinion. You have your opinion. We have our opinion. If you went to the same game I went to, I saw my portion of it and what I think. And you saw yours. So, Ryan, let's huddle up and break this and move the chains.
Yeah, we got to move the chains and get to talking about this game. Before we do, a little bit of, I don't know if it's like breaking news, but we'll do it. A lot of people were asking us about, hey, when is USC and Oregon going to kick off? Obviously, that's a big one. Right now, we learned on Monday morning there will be the six-day window selection for that. So it's going to depend on what happens with USC and Washington this weekend. The TV networks are going to wait to see where they put USC versus Oregon because Washington is also playing Utah, so that's also in the six-day window. So, for example, if USC beats Washington, it'll be, you know, that Oregon game will be more featured, I guess you could say. And then, you know, Oregon's got Cal this weekend, so it shouldn't be that big of a deal. And, you know, Washington, if Washington wins, the Washington-Utah game would probably be the more featured matchup because Utah this weekend has Arizona State, you know, who they've been better recently. But so the six-day window for that, so we won't know the game time for USC versus Oregon until after this weekend's games, and it'll be a better time slot most likely if USC beats Washington.
Well, that's good. I'm glad you told me that. So yeah. I'm going to know 6 days before the game.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, if you're traveling up to, and it's tough because, you know, Portland's a little bit of a drive from Eugene. So people that are going up to the game, you're flying to Portland, you're not sure when you're going to be driving down. So we won't know until after this weekend. So root for USC to win. You'll probably get a better time slot. I'm not sure what slots are available, if it's a night game is possible or not, but obviously it's a big one up there, Eugene. So I just want to kind of let everyone know what was going on with that. And Coach, we mentioned this game started off really weird with the protest right before kickoff. You got the halftime thing going on where they do an untimed down right before half. And then, you know, a 2-point conversion at the end, like just a weird game overall. And I guess it's sort of a fitting end to, you know, USC and Berkeley and, you know, Cal playing all those years. I mean, 110 years, I guess, of history there. Everything that's been going on between these two programs, it sort of was like a great way to kind of sum it all up in one last game, I guess.
Well, I don't know what to call a game. It was a long game, about a 4-hour game, and you have just about everything happened in that game that could happen in a football game. As you just mentioned, some of the things that you saw and we saw, I don't think I've ever seen, I can't remember me ever seeing a play given after halftime, ever. And so there was a long debate on that, and I guess Coach Riley had the one out on that. It went up and lined out for a field goal, and all that debate and everything wasn't worth anything because they came out with the same score that they went in and started the second half with the same score. So it's too bad they missed that field goal, but I don't know. That's the way it goes in college football. Nothing's for sure.
Yeah, the weird thing was, Coach, that Dennis Lynch, by getting that one extra play after halftime, and I asked Lincoln Riley about this post game, and he kind of gave a long answer about him going over there, challenging. By the time he challenged, though, the players were already in the locker room, and he said the referees did the right thing, that it came from above, that they said it send everyone to the locker room. But once Lincoln Riley knew that this was the call, the ruling on the field, he could challenge it. And he had felt very strongly that it was like at least a second left on the clock. So he felt that this was going to be the right thing. So, you know, the band is playing. The referees are listening to Lincoln Riley. Then they like review it and say, okay, they will have 1 second left. Coach Wilcox, Justin Wilcox, comes flying out of the locker room and he's irate. And I think Lincoln Riley said he was pissed, was the words he used, if I'm not mistaken. And Justin Wilcox told Riley, like, you know, I get it. I would have done the same thing. And Riley told Wilcox, like, yeah, if I was in your shoes, I'd be pissed too. And the referees decide that they're going to do an untimed down, right before. They don't want to bring the players back out because they're already in the locker room. So basically before the third quarter starts, they're going to finish the second quarter. But the weird thing is, Chris Trevino, I think, pointed this out because he was down on the field for us, that Dennis Lynch could practice the exact same kick that he was going to do, like it would have been the end of the second quarter. He could practice it because the kickers come out early and warm up. So he was practicing the exact kick that he ended up missing. And Justin Wilcox calls a timeout. So he called timeout after halftime, but it was a first half timeout, not a second half timeout. Just a really weird thing. And then after all that, he misses the field goal. So I like you. I've never seen anything like that, Coach. You've been around this game a lot longer than I have, but I've never seen a first half play run after halftime.
No, I haven't. I think it was probably a good way to do it if there was actually a second left on the clock. You don't want the game decided on that, so didn't make any difference anyway. The guy missed a field goal. So, you know, I used to tell those kickers, never mind what I used to tell them.
Well, did you think it was weird that he was able to practice the right kick? Like, I don't know what the referees could say, but like, hey, you can warm up, but don't practice the exact kick you're about to do. Like, that seems kind of unfair. I don't know what you could do for that, but that was a weird one.
I don't know. I wouldn't have challenged it, but it worked out okay. All right? It worked out okay, and I don't know. Maybe he thought about it too much, and, you know, those kickers sometimes think about everything too much, and And that's why you call that time out. You're trying to psych him out and everything else. So it worked. So I don't know. We spent too much time on this already.
That's true. Good point, Coach. Okay, so wanted to get, you know, looking at your tweets during the game, you can follow him on Twitter, at Coach Harvey Hyde. I think the discipline aspect comes up. You know, this was a weird game where USC won the turnover battle 4-1 and still needed this crazy comeback to come back and win. It seemed like not being able to fit the runs correctly or allowing the quarterback to pick up fourth down or third down with his legs, you know, critical plays and inopportune penalties. It seemed like discipline was one of the, I guess, I don't want to say you're harping on it, but just one of the aspects you were sort of pointing out throughout the game.
Well, I was. I think it was for the whole team as far as being able to perform the assignment that you're given and also to be able to stay with something that's working. I think sometimes you get away from what's working, but you think it's working too well or you think you have to be smart to do something else. And you have to be disciplined in your assignments as a football player of the play called and what your gap is and all the different things that go along with it. And I just don't see that. I don't see that consistency as far as among the entire team, the all 11 players. I mean, it takes 11 players to play on offense and defense and special teams, and you don't always see that happening, and it's something that you have to do. Plus, I don't see the discipline as far as, you know, the penalties and the different things. What did they have, 101 yards in penalties, something like that? I mean, that's just part of discipline. That's just part of knowing what to do, when to do it, and to be able to control what your feelings are, your emotions are, and holding, and all the different things. And you do things that really hurt the team, and that's all part of, you know, I don't know, discipline, concentration, the whole thing. And you know, I don't see it on the sidelines. I don't see it anywhere. And it just bothers me. Bothers me because when you have supposedly better football players than your other team, you've either done one of three things. You've either misevaluated your players, you haven't recruited right, or you have them out of position, or you haven't disciplined them to perform what you ask them to do or act on the football field. And if it's not the players, then what is it? It's discipline or coaching. So if you have great talent, then it's your responsibility to put those players in a position and teach them to be disciplined, both on and off the field.
Yeah, there's, I mean, 101, 11 penalties for 101 yards, that's not good. Just really feasty or famine, you know, it was like, and we'll talk about it on the defensive side. But before we get into that, I do want to talk about the offense. And they ran the ball more. They had 26 runs by running backs in this one. This was one of my keys to the game, Coach. They actually did a good job of it. Now, it wasn't a lot of success early, but Marshawn Lloyd broke a couple later on. Austin Jones found the end zone. But I feel like sticking with the run kind of really helped this offense. I don't know what you feel about it, Coach.
Well, I feel this. I feel the USC has the skilled players to be a great offense. And I think you've got one of the top running backs in the country in Lloyd. You've got the top one of the top running backs. I'm not saying he is a top running back. You've got maybe the top quarterback in America. You've got great receivers. But you're still worried about stats and you're worried about all the other things. There's no continuity. There is absolutely no identity to the offense of what you're going to do next. I mean, there's so much you could make of that offense with a great running back, with lead draws and things to help Caleb, screens to Lloyd. Not that Jones isn't a great back, but, you know, I see the kid run 53 yards or 56 yards for a great play, and then you take him out of the game and put in Jones to get the score. Why? Why wouldn't let the kid get his own touchdown? I mean, these are the things I see, okay? I don't know why you take him out. But there's so many things like this that you can have great series. You can be a balanced offense. You've got the tools to be a balanced offense. You can make it so much harder on the defense by being able to run series when you have a great running back, you have a great quarterback, you have really good receivers. You can help your offensive line as far as making the defense be more conscious of the run, and the pass blocking would be better, all this, but you make it so hard on yourself. I mean, you run these plays and you have a lot of success and then you never run them again. I don't get it, or why you don't just keep it balance, or is there something that says I got to throw the ball, or we've got to keep things happy? I think what you got to do is to have a great offense and a great defense by consistency, experience, timing, rhythm, and make it difficult for the defense to be able to stop you. But it doesn't seem to like to be that way. They don't want to make it easy for themselves. They make it so difficult for themselves. Thank goodness they had the turnovers in the game. If they didn't have those turnovers in the game and the kid fumbling that punt return, I'm not quite sure if they'd have won that football game. So I don't know why they want to make it so hard on themselves rather than just go out there, play football, don't care who gets the glory, do what works, make it easy on yourself, and utilize your tight end. I keep telling you this all the time. Utilize your tight end in a passing game. It's a mismatch off a play action. Put him on the line of scrimmage. Run two backs. They ran a lot of two back sets. Both of your backs are pretty good receivers. Have him pass block. If the guy doesn't come, let him be the check off guy. I mean, it's so hard. Look how they checked off to Lloyd a couple times and the runs they had. And I mean, this is, you know, you could throw a 3-yard pass and it'd be a 50-yard gain. You still get the stats. So I just don't quite understand the rhythm, the philosophy of their offense, where it's so hard to make it so hard for you to watch and say, why'd they call that play?
Yeah. Well, you mentioned the defense. I want to get onto that side, too. Four turnovers. One of them was on special teams. And it was really, to me, like the just feast or famine. Like they were giving up chunk plays, seven plays of 7 or 20 or more yards to Cal, 527 yards of offense. I mean, four straight drives where Cal scores touchdowns after fumbling their initial drive, and three more touchdowns in the second half. It just seemed like, you know, 49 points to Cal. It's the most they've ever scored in a loss. But there were some big defensive plays too. I don't know if you've seen this before, Coach, where you're just like kind of, it's either you give up a touchdown or it's a turnover on downs or force a turnover. It seems like it was one big play or another, either a big play that you allowed or a big play that you created. But at the end of the day, you can't give up 49 points to Cal, and that's what USC did. It wasn't off a whole bunch of turnovers. This was long drive, 75-yard drive, 75-yard drive, 66-yard drive, 50-yard drive, 75-yard drive, 54-yard drive, 79-yard drive. Like, these were drives with huge plays in them. I don't know what you made of it, Coach.
Well, I think I was watching Aaron Rodgers out there. I mean, they made Mendoza, I don't know, all of a sudden he became a passing star, too, at the same time. And that was hard for me to believe. But actually, if you watch that football game, they got away from the run in the second half. Their back aught was hurt, I guess. And so they went to the passing game, and they had a lot of success during the football. But again, you know, when you're not disciplined on the defensive side of the football, and they aren't, the linebackers were not going to their gaps, and I know at halftime they got hell for it. They weren't tackling well in the first half as far as on the run. There were gaping holes where he ran through for those two opening long run touchdowns. I mean, gaping holes. Nobody got to that gap whatsoever, and they were getting cut off, and the whole thing, they're in the line of scrimmage, trying to take the wrong gap. I mean, the second half, they play a little better with that. I watch them. They change the linebackers up for something. I don't know what they told Gentry at halftime, but he played a lot better and seemed as though that he played more like the linebacker they talked about him being. So, you know, you've got to get these type of efforts, and you got to be disciplined on defense, because if two guys go to the same gap or do the same assignment, you know, guy's going to go straight to the goal line. And the secondary, you know, pass interferences, and I don't know what technique they're teaching or whatever, but Mendoza had a great day throwing the football. They ran the football. They kept USC really off balance. And on that two-point play, I'm going to tell you, Gentry, I don't want to point out kids' names. I apologize there, but there was a hole on that play. If you looked at it, nobody made a big deal out of it.
Yeah, no, that, yeah, I think it was questionable. It was close, but yeah,
he tackled him. It wasn't questionable. He tackled him. I think he thought he had the ball.
Yeah, I think Bear Alexander made a difference too in the second half.
Yes, he did.
Yeah.
Yes. That's a good point. He did make a difference in the second half.
Yeah, and then we had a lot of questions, but one more thing. I mean, they get the punt recovery, the fumble recovery on a USC punt, and it's weird because Cal never returns punts. They've only returned a few this year. Decide to do one, fumble it away. It probably cost them the game. But, oh, man, Coach, like kickoff returns, not getting back to the 25. They had one that got to the 10, one that got to the 11, really putting an offense that was struggling at the time in holes. First kickoff goes out of bounds. You know, Cal gets to the 35. There was just a lot of hidden yards that were going against USC in the special teams play. Then, of course, missing that missing the field goal that should have been the end of the first half, missing an extra point. It just seemed like the special teams, they had the one big play that was beneficial, getting the fumble. Tyker Curtis punched that out there. But outside of that, it was a pretty abysmal effort, I think, from USC special teams, Coach, once again.
All comes down to discipline. Special teams is discipline as far as staying in your lanes, covering, breaking down, making the tackle, knowing where you are on the field, when to fair catch, when to let it go through the end zone, when to run it out. It's all part of discipline and not trying to be a star or trying to do something you're not supposed to do, but go by the rules and regulations of where you are in the field and what you've been taught. But sometimes kids just forget that, and it's a me show, and I'm going to run it back for a touchdown. Or whatever is in their minds, and these things start to happen. So missed field goals of that distance, missed extra points, all that is not, what do you want to call, is not acceptable. I think that's the best way to put it. It's not acceptable. You're going to lose games when you can't do those things. You practice all week on them. Yeah, it comes down to winning or losing a football game. Those things are unacceptable, and the special teams is a big part of college football. I made sure that I coached a portion of special teams, and I learned that from Johnny Majors. A lot of you don't know who Johnny Majors is because you're too young, but he was a head coach at Tennessee and Pittsburgh and all that, and he told me I learned that in the Japan Bowl when I coached with him over there. I said, I noticed you're coaching the entire special teams here, Coach. He said, yeah, I want my players to know that I think special teams are the most important thing or one of the most important games things on the field when we win or lose. So he coached special teams in the All-Star game over there. So, you've got to make it important. If you look at some teams play, they have their starters on special teams, not backup guys. They think it's so important. They're playing their starters, the guys that are playing their best players on special teams, to let the others know and the players know how really important it really is. Sometimes you say, I want to get this guy in the game. I want to get this guy some playing time, so let's put him on the special teams. Well, that guy will cost you a football game. So, you've got to make it something that's important or the kids don't think it's important.
Yeah. All right. Well, we got a lot of questions. So let's get to let's take a break and we'll come back and we'll start answering questions. We got a lot, Coach. Fans, get the win. Still not really happy. So back in a minute, everybody.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Are you looking to advertise a campaign, short film, a public service announcement, an important message? Look no further than Regency Outdoor. We have been around since 1974 and have the greatest locations in Southern California for your advertising goals. Our creative billboards are sure to catch everyone's attention. Make an impact anywhere and everywhere in Southern California. To get started and for more information, call 310-657-8883 or visit RegencyOutdoor.com. Regency makes it easier than ever to get your message everywhere in Southern California.
All righty. Let's our buddy Don in Chicago. Now, just this is his voicemail, Coach. Maybe a little hint of sarcasm in there just to give you a preview, but let me play it for you and get your thoughts. Here you go.
Hey, it's Don from Chi-Town. Listen, what a great win by USC. And I'll tell you, man, our defense really came up big with that 2-point conversion and those turnovers in the second half. They played a great game. And you know what, Coach Hyde, and Ryan, I really think we need to re-sign Grinch to a long-term contract because I feel like the team, he's turning the team around now and the defense. I mean, Mendoza, the Cal quarterback, clearly a first-round draft pick, and we shut him down in the second half. So let's see if we can get, you know, Grinch that contract extension, right? Especially with Oregon coming up now, we can't lose him because, we really need Grinch, for our defense against Oregon. So, hey, Coach Hyde, Ryan, what do you guys think? Don't you think we should sign him up for another couple of years, lock him down so we've got him over the next couple of years? Hey, thanks so much, guys. Fight on.
Hey, I'm actually laughing at this guy. This guy's great.
Way to go,
guy's
Don.
Great.
Yeah.
Oh, it really is. I can tell he's tired of saying say it in one way, so he changed the way of saying it. but yeah, he's got a lot of pressure on him, and obviously the defense isn't playing well. And I want you to know, it's not just the defense. I think the offense too is not in a rhythm or where they're utilizing their players at the best that they could. Also, but on defense. They really do break down. They allow a lot of points. They make it a football game. Every game's a football game, okay? You don't have confidence if there's 2 minutes left in the game. You don't have confidence we're going to win this football game. Time management, we're going to win this football game. And it goes down to, should have Cal kicked the extra point? I don't know. Should they have gone for two? Should have Lincoln Riley gone for two? As many times as he did. Should he kick the extra points? These are all things you look back at now And you see, you're pretty good at asking these questions during the game. During the game at that time, you're not quite sure if it's right or wrong. But, you know, he's taking a lot of pressure, and the kids are taking a lot of pressure on the defensive side of the football. If there's going to be a change on the defensive side of the football, it isn't going to happen now, because I'm not quite sure that would improve the defense. But what I mean by that, who on the defensive side of the football, if they make a change, is going to improve the defensive philosophy and what they're doing defensively? They're not going to change what they're doing. They might change personnel or that. So you got to just ride it through now. He had the opportunity of making that change last year, and I think what he tried to do is satisfy everybody. Lincoln Riley, he said he was going to be a bigger part of the defensive side of the football. He was not going to allow this to happen again. He was going to be involved in the defensive side of the football. I don't really see him involved in the defensive side of the football during the game. Maybe at halftime he is. But I think he's turned that. And Mike Leach did the same thing, okay? Came up on the meet Mike Leach tree. Mike Leach couldn't have cared less what the defense did. Let them do their thing. I'm going to do my thing. They can do their thing. Just get me to football. And he had the philosophy that we'll just make it difficult on them and we'll just outscore them. So I just think it's something that Lincoln Riley has done, and he's a close friend of this guy, and they've been able to overcome a lot of their problems by wins and having great athletes making great plays on the offensive side of the football. And the last season at the end and most of this season, they have not performed on the defensive side of the football, so they more or less have put themselves in this position by making statements during the offseason, at the end of the season, after the Tulane game, people looking for these changes, and the changes haven't happened. So all the criticism that's going on is partly due to them.
Yeah. You mentioned the two-point conversion. We did have a question about that. Chris in San Pedro said, can you address this with Coach Harvey Hyde about going for the two-point conversions? In the Utah game, kicking the extra point would have ensured overtime. In the Cal game, we would have been up by 9 or 10, and the game virtually would have been over, whether they score or not. Makes no sense to me, especially considering we haven't been successful, and really on most of the conversion attempts, we haven't even been close. On the other hand, other teams seem to have an easier time converting on us. He says, thank you, Chris in San Pedro. They actually got the win against Arizona on two-point conversions, got the stop against Arizona, and got the convert on that one. I think USC went for too early. They didn't need to really do that. I think the book says you're supposed to, but and it just seems like there was a whole bunch of points scored. There were a whole bunch of drives. Like, you could have made up for it some other point. And I don't have a problem with Wilcox going for two there. I mean, you're the undermanned team, got banged up a little bit, go for the win. I didn't have an issue with that one. But any thoughts on all the two-point conversions, Coach?
A lot of two-point conversions. You know, more or less to me, it was the timing and the momentum of a football game where I made those type of decisions. I know you have that little card that tells you go for one, go for two, and so on. There's sometimes I didn't go by that little card. Because it depended what part of the game, when the game was, what process, what quarter we were in. Is it going to make a difference right now, or should I just maintain the momentum, get the score, not give the momentum back to them for them stopping us? Do we need to do that now? I think you've got to know that in advance when you're driving down the field. You'd have a discussion with your offensive coordinator and yourself and the head football coach. And I don't know if that time, since Lincoln Riley's calling the plays, if he can have any discussions with anyone on what he wants to do or what's best at this time in the game as far as going for one or two. But you got to have a plan now. If we score, we're going to go for one. If we score, we have to go for two. You should have that already decided before it happens. I know I used to have it always before it decided or happened, depending on what part of the game it is, the momentum, and all that that went along with it. You know, the chances of making a two-point play, I think the percentages are that you're not going to make it more than you are going to make it. And when I think when Williams scored on that play. It was really a keep that he made that two-point play. He almost didn't make it, the one they made. And I agree with you. There isn't anything unique that USC has done to make that two-point play. I mean, it seems like a special play that's drawn up somehow that hasn't been utilized or any series or anything to make them think about anything different. It's always something that, I don't know, it's in the grab bag again. And I mean, myself, when you have better players than someone else, you should be able to design a play where you can physically get that two-point play or make it come off a series that you have or whatever. And I don't know. A lot of two-point plays, a lot of going back and second-guessing in this game, and we're always right when you can second-guess. So that's why I went into broadcasting, because I'm always right now, and when I coached, I was always wrong.
Fair point, Coach. All right, here's another voicemail for you.
Hey, Ryan, Coach Hyatt, Franker from the East Coast. How you doing? So now that we've given up 42.5 points over the past five games, I think we can all look forward and say, beyond this season, it's not going to play in the Big Ten next year. It just won't. And I feel like we've got to the point with Lincoln Riley where it's like the Wizard of Oz. We pull back the curtain on what's supposed to be this great head coach, and all we see is a guru of one side of the ball. And Coach Hyatt, I was just wondering, and this is a parallel I draw, and I know you've had probably a lot of conversations with Randall over the years on this one. He reminds me a lot of Buddy Ryan. Buddy came to Philly. He was a defensive line coach for the Purple People Eaters. He's the architect of the 46 defense, the Bears, the Super Bowl. Came to Philly. He had incredible defenses, great players, Reggie White, Jerome Brown, Eric Allen, the works. And despite being there 5 years having these amazing defenses, we made the playoffs but never won a playoff game. Two more years in Phoenix and he was out. Why? Because he was fixated on the one side of the ball. You know, Randall's led the league in being sacked five times. It was that bad. And it reminds me a lot now of what's going on with Riley. He's great offenses, he's Heisman Trophy winners, but just pathetic on the other side of the ball. And as we learn with Buddy, no matter what your greatness is on one side, it just won't get you where you need to go. You can't be so great that it's going to offset, you know, just mediocrity, beyond mediocrity, just bad on the other, just abjectly bad on the other side of the field. So just kind of wondering what your thoughts are on that one. Take care. Bye.
Well, my feelings are you got to always have a great defense to win championships. I don't want to talk about what's happening across town, but they have an identity. Their defense is their identity. They're going to keep you in a football game. They're going to give your offense an opportunity to win by giving them the ball. They're going to create turnovers. They're going to give your opponent poor field position by sacking them seven times like they did Sanders this past week in 11 hurries. And on offense, you don't have to score a lot of points. All you have to do is don't have any turnovers, have an identity, run the football equally, and also pass the ball equally. And you're going to win your share of football games. And I think that this is not the identity. Like I said earlier, SC really doesn't have an identity. Are they a great offensive team? I don't think they are. They score a lot of points, but they could sure be a better identity offensive football team. But they got a great bunch of stars. It just isn't one star. You can protect your superstar, which is the quarterback, who's the superstar, with your other great players by running the football, making it easy on them, and so on. And you could do it. But right now, yes, you have to be a balanced football team. To win championships, you got to play defense. You got to play offense. You got to have great special teams. You got to be disciplined on and off the field and everything you do, and not be involved in all the other things that are happening, sitting on the floor of a Laker game and doing all these things. I mean, that's great. But what's your priorities? You got to have priorities. Right now, a lot of players get as much publicity off the field than they do on the field. And I think it's supposed to be on the field where you gain all of who you are. And I think it's the coach's responsibilities, too, to put them in a position when they can prove who they are. and not say, well, we're going to be great offensively or we're going to be great deep. Hey, you got to be great everywhere. And right now, USC is not great everywhere. And I don't know if they're utilizing, like I said earlier, their players to the best of what a coaching staff should do on the offensive side of football. Now, again, this is just my opinion, but you've got a running back that's as good as any running back in the country. And you've got a quarterback that could be the best quarterback or is the best quarterback in the country. With that type of combination with the receivers you have, you should be unbelievable as far as moving the football on a balanced attack. And on defense, you've got to put together a defense that's solid and sound and not confused and have players who can do their assignment and follow through or do whatever is necessary to win. And you can't keep, I don't think, changing things or rotating a lot of players because I don't think you have that many great players on the defensive side of the football. I mean, you've got adequate players, and you do have one or two that are pretty good players, but you got to have them have a unit pride. Well, unit pride is to not anybody, like UCLA has given up one rushing touchdown the whole year. I mean, you've got to have goals you set up on the defensive side of the football that those players put together that they want to accomplish these things. And I don't know if I see that as far as anywhere on that side of the football.
Yeah. All right, we got a few more we want to get to. I know we don't have a lot of time, so we'll try to get through these quick. This is from dad of a current Spirit of Troy member, that's the band. He says, gents, these can't all be true, right? That one, Caleb is a generational talent. Two, Lincoln Riley is a genius or fantastic coach. And three, the team has played very poorly for the last month, including bad coaching, complete lack of discipline, stupid penalties, et cetera, et cetera. He says, I think number three is true. Are you seriously ready to question Lincoln Riley's coaching, or is Caleb merely very good? Thanks from the Trojan dad.
Well, let me put it to you this way. Sometimes people forget that players win games, coaches lose games. What I mean by that is if you don't have great players and put them in a position where you can win, you're not going to win. If you put Harvey Hyde at quarterback, you're not going to win, okay? I don't care if you're Lincoln Riley or whoever. You put Caleb Williams there, you got a pretty good percentage to win if you do the right things to surround him and allow him to use his talents to win along with the other players. So it comes down to the number of players that you have that are capable of winning for you on the level you're coaching at. You never out-coach anybody. You out-player and recruit people, and then you try your best not to ruin those players and put them in a position where they can be successful. Not thinking too much, but allowing them to utilize their skills on why you recruited them. You recruited them, obviously, because they're pretty good at what they do. So let them do the things that you recruited them for. Don't confuse them or change them. Put them in a position where they can execute, not think. And that's why I sometimes think that, you know, huddling up isn't a bad thing, especially on a big down on the goal line or fourth and one or whatever it is. So everyone understands, hey, this is what the play is. We need to all be together. The snap count is on two or whatever. So no one misses it where there's a mistake. And I think this is all part of coaching and understanding that coaching comes from players that can perform the assignment that you've given them. And don't give them an assignment they cannot perform. And I think this is all part of what coaching is bringing your players to a level that you can defeat somebody if you don't make mistakes and you allow them to play at their abilities. And if you recruited the right players, you got a pretty good chance.
All right, here's another voicemail for you, Coach.
Hey, Ryan, this question is for you, Coach Grinch, and Coach Riley. When are you going to transfer from the Twilight Zone to the Reality Zone concerning how good this USC football team really is? The fans who are predicting that this team will not win another game on their schedule are basing their opinion on reality and what they see week after week. I'm one of those fans. Concerning the remaining schedule, USC will close out their schedule by going 0-3.
Ryan, he directed that to you.
That was to me. Well, they were saying that before the Cal game, which, to be fair, USC almost lost, but they won that one. So Washington's not been playing that well. This is definitely a winnable game, and you just kind of have to go with it. I feel like if you're Grinch, if you're Riley, you're saying that we are still second place in the Pac-12, and they have really tough games, all ranked teams coming up. They've not been playing the level that you could beat those teams, but you could still do it. You know, Lincoln Riley was very adamant after the game, coach, that they still can win the Pac-12 championship, that they have what it takes to do it. They just have to play their good. They haven't been really playing their good. He said their good is good enough to beat anybody. And I wouldn't disagree with him on that. We just haven't seen their good, especially in the last month. We haven't seen a lot of good from Washington either. So I think you try to get this win, and if you beat a number five team in the country, who knows what's going to happen after that. It's homecoming. There's a lot going on. So I think it's a huge game. I'm not going to just say, I mean, certainly they could lose them all. I don't think they're going to lose them all, but, you know, they could. But if you're a USC fan, that's not what I would be focused on. I don't know. I don't know what you think, coach.
Well, that's a difficult question because you're now into a position where I said last week on the podcast that Cal wasn't a give me. And that's sort of demonstrating my thoughts on how good of a football team USC is currently right now. And they were lucky to get out of Cal with a victory, okay?
Very lucky, yeah.
And they lost to a Utah team that had all backups everywhere. And Oregon beat Utah in Utah, 35-6. Washington hasn't played up to the ability they played against Oregon, but they were good enough to beat the teams they had to beat. And I think that they'll be ready to play in Southern California and ruin USC's homecoming. And if they can beat them by 50 points, that's be their goal. And their coach is not intimidated because he's coached Fresno State down to beat UCLA in the Rose Bowl and so on. So he's an excellent coach. And I think someday, if he wants to be, would be an excellent NFL coach. So if I had to put it all together and look at that, I would say that USC's got to fight its, you know what, off to stay in the game. Because they're not going to play an undisciplined football team or a team that hasn't won. They're undefeated. They got a national ranking. And you hope that they can survive without beating themselves. And he's going to have to do some things offensively and get some big plays and get some help, turnovers and so on, to beat a team like Washington. You're just going to have to. And Washington is going to help USC beat them, which means they're going to have to fumble, they're going to have to throw interceptions, they're going to have a punt block or something to sort of momentum and get the crowd in the game to beat USC, for USC to beat them. Right now, the favorite is Washington, okay? And yes, as a football coach, aren't you going to say what he's saying? What are you going to say that, oh, no, we don't think we can win, or we're not going to win? Yeah, we can still win it, but I could fly to the moon too, okay? the odds of me making it to the moon aren't very good, are they?
No, not so much.
I would say the odds against him going undefeated aren't very good. But it could happen. Anything can happen in college football. And I would say probably the best playing team currently and right now in the Pac-12 right now is Oregon. I think they've got a great offense, a great defense. You're playing them there. Wow. And there's not a lot of love between USC and Oregon, okay? Not a lot of love. So Oregon will be all up for recruiting, everything else, to beat USC there. So that is going to be a very difficult game. And then across town, they're starting to be a pretty good football team right now. As far as the defense performances, the way they're playing defensively, the way they made a quarterback change, they've got a good running game. They utilize their tight end. They don't have to score a lot of points because nobody scores a lot of points on them. They don't beat themselves. That's going to be a very difficult game to win. So, and it's a one-game season, okay? So right now, looking at what USC is facing, it's going to be a very difficult task. And to not be realistic is you're crazy. And for him not to say we have an ability or a chance to win the Pac-12 is a true statement. But realistically, it's a difficult challenge.
Yeah. Dan, class of 62, he wanted to know about the next three opponents. You kind of went over that, so we'll appreciate that. We have a bunch more. We'll try to rapid fire these real quick. Robert in Mykonos, Greece, texted in and said, I know you can't speak for anyone else, but for you, coach, personally, as a head football coach, what would it have taken you to miss two straight practices? Thanks and fight on from Robert. So Lincoln Riley missed two practices because he had pneumonia.
Right. Well, I really don't know how sick he was, but if he was really sick and he couldn't stand up or is coughing and, you know, then I don't think I've ever missed a practice. Not that I was stupid, probably not to miss a practice. But you got to be pretty sick, okay? You got to be pretty sick to miss a practice. You really do. And I don't think it should be kept a secret. I mean, it was kept basically a secret for a long period of time. We didn't know if he had a breakdown. We didn't know if he was sick. We didn't know if he had COVID. We didn't know what it was. And what the big secrecy? Everything's a secret. He's so protected over there. One more question, this and that. Don't stop him at the gate. What's the big protection about? You know, he's got more security than the President of the United States. And you know what I'm talking about, Ryan? It's true. I mean, when he runs up and goes through the gate at practice, he didn't even slow down or try to say, how you doing, guys? Nothing. I don't know if I said this last week or not, but I went to practice there. I never had a chance to say hello to him or thanks for coming, guys, to practice. Enjoy it. Blah, 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 blah. I mean, it's almost like he doesn't even look at you. And, Ryan, if I'm exaggerating, please tell me, okay?
No, I get you, Coach.
Yeah, so it's hard to wonder why. Why not the honesty that he's really sick, he's got pneumonia, blah, blah, blah. He's running a temperature of 102. We don't want him around the team because we don't, you know, him to catch or give it or spread it or whatever the hell it is, and move on. But, man, everything's such a secret that you start making up stories and you start wondering what the hell's going on, you know?
Yeah. Chris in Phoenix, class of 92, he says, Coach, first, thank you for always bringing the USC fans a dose of reality. What's really happening on the field and clarify why it's happening. Your post-game insights are invaluable and a must listen. He says, second and most importantly, why do you think the press is giving Lincoln Riley and his staff such a pass during the post-game conferences and during the week? No one asks any hard-hitting questions or even challenging questions. Are you scared of being banned or covering the program? That's completely false, Chris. Because do you remember the old days with big, nasty Joe McDonald and Doug Kerkorian? Joe McDonald was not a beat writer. He was like a shock jock kind of guy. Those guys would have pounded Lincoln Riley for answers as to why he hasn't fired Alex Grinch or why Caleb Williams looks lost on the field. No one ever challenges Lincoln Riley on anything. Appreciate all you do for USCfootball.com. Chris in Phoenix.
Well, you know, I think, first of all, we have a bunch of young reporters covering USC football, young beat writers, young people that are getting a start, and they're a little bit intimidated by him. They're afraid to ask him, and they don't want to upset him if he starts to say, why'd you ask me that, or that's a wrong question. It is intimidating to them, you know? And the good old boys, or the boys of the old days with a cigar in their mouth, didn't give a damn what this. They wanted to know this or do that, or it would be on the news or on the radio or so on, or written in a column or told exactly the way it is. And that's what I said as far as the protection. One more question. and all of these type of things. It isn't really a press conference. It's a I'll see you after the game type of thing. We sit there, and he avoids the question. He doesn't want to answer it, and I think he gets a little touchy. Ryan, would you agree with me? I think he gets a little touchy on some of the questions that are asked him, because it's not a writer that's been around for 30 years, and he more or less looks at them as kids and thinks they don't know or doesn't have to answer the question. Nothing against that if you can get away with it. And he's been able to get away with that. And no one has challenged the one more question thing. Like, wait a minute, Katie, what do you mean one more question? I didn't even have a chance to ask a question. And if you're going to wait around for a press conference, you should be giving the press some type of courtesy where they feel as though they've had the opportunity to interview the head coach and get their columns and materials and get answers for the people who read them or listen to them. And that's just my feeling. I always wanted to make sure, and I've said this on this show and others, you can't beat a barrel of ink if they decide to use it. And the services like Ryan has and the other services are becoming more important every day, because the media sports sections are getting smaller and smaller and aren't getting the spaces that they used to get in the newspapers. So you better treat these guys good and respectful. And I'd like to see that be a bigger part of the program.
Yeah, and I would just disagree with a lot of you saying, Chris. I mean, he was asked about keeping Alex Grinch. We've asked him multiple times. This isn't a trial. It's not a few good men. We're going to get up there and like, you can't handle the truth. He's asked about it. He said he's focused on playing Washington. We got three questions after the Cal game. And I asked him about the halftime fiasco stuff. He went on, like, he took a long time on that. It's just hard to get these in. But he's been asked about those things. And we can't force him to say, this is why I'm keeping Alex Grinch. Like, this, he's going to give you the answer he's given you, and you just kind of go from there. All right. But he's been asked that stuff. It's just not, you're not being like a fan and yelling at him and telling him, we think Alex Grinch sucks. Like, this is a reporter, not a fan. So it's a little bit different what's going on. But he's been asked all that stuff. He's asked about the rotation. Why is this guy not playing? Why is this happening? And it just, you know, you probably don't like his answers, but it's not like we've avoided the questions. No one's worried about getting banned because they're asking a tough question. Nobody's worried about that. What people got banned for was doing things that, you know, reporting on stuff you're not supposed to report on, not about asking hard questions. So I know you're frustrated with what's going on there, but it's not the reporter's fault that he's not firing Alex Grinch.
No, you know, Ryan, let me just tell you this. I think he has a great media people, a group of people covering him. You know, there were days when people became investigative reporters. When they didn't get the information that they asked for, they went on their own to get it. And you don't want that to happen. So I think that if you're answering questions at a press conference, you're obviously taking care of the press and you care about the press and what they write. And they are the backbone to your program as far as getting it out there. And you've heard me, Ryan. I say it. The other guys don't say it. Because if they don't give me a credential, I don't care. Okay? But the way they treat you at practice in the sun in a little playpen area where you can't walk anywhere and there's no restrooms anywhere for the media to use. There's no room for you to wait in for 2 hours of practice. They tell you to go to Denny's or find a room on campus. I mean, I'm just telling you folks out there, Ryan can't say it, but I can. This is what happens behind the scenes. There, Ryan.
No, I'm not happy. Like, we've had our window to watch practice has shrunk. It's only like, you know, several minutes. We only get to watch basically the stretching. So it's pretty much a waste. Only getting three questions after the Cal game, I thought was dumb. They brought in all the players and had them all speak at once instead of breaking out. So not been happy with the way things are running. I could say it too, Coach, and I'll let them know also. But you know, they're the ones that control what we get, and we can complain, and we do, and we'll tell them, hey, we don't like this. So it just kind of depends on what they're going to do. All right, we went on too long with that.
We went a little too long for it, but I hope they listen to this podcast. Maybe they can learn something.
Yeah.
I mean it. I don't care. I think they should learn something. It's 110 degrees, and you guys are out there trying to cover it. You would think they'd offer you a bottle of water, okay? Or something like that. No, there's nothing. And I'm, ladies and gentlemen, I'm serious about the restrooms. There is not a restroom anywhere open for the media. So if you are allowed to go in there, you know what they tell you? Find a building that's unlocked. I mean, think about that, guys, please.
All right. We got a few more, and we'll let you go. Dave says, I associate with other USC alumni, especially in the fall when we tailgate, attend games, and conduct fundraising for scholarships and related activities. We have been discussing the rash of articles criticizing Lincoln Riley. You must know that this adversely affects the players, especially the young ones in recruiting. Articles criticizing the coach for missing practice because of illness are absurd. Trying to shield players from media exposure is normal for at least three of the top teams, Georgia, Ohio State, and Alabama, according to friends in those areas. As you know, it takes 4 or 5 years to build a program. We ask that you give Lincoln Riley your support. He's made SC relevant again after more than a decade of being lost. Thank you from Dave. It's a little public service message from Dave, Coach.
Well, I think it's a good question. First of all, I feel sorry. You've already heard me talk about the players. I'm a player's coach. I love the players, and I think they should be protected. And I think that they should also be taken care of. But again, I think they have a responsibility, too, to grow up, have a class in media relations, and what if you have to do, and when being interviewed, understand how that's going to be. But someday in your life, you're going to have to apply for a job or fill out an application. And you should be able to have the experience of these type of opportunities, of talking and understanding and explaining your feelings and answering questions. You're not doing them any favor. What are they learning? All the people are doing is asking them questions. And if you've taught them right and explained them how you answer questions and how you call them, yes, sir, yes, ma'am, I'll answer it to the best of my ability, but I'm not a football coach. I mean, this is what people respect. And these are how kids grow up, and it's part of football being an educational opportunity for players as far as communication with adults. So I think that they hurt them in that type of positioning and protecting them too much.
Yeah. All right. Two more. We'll let you go. We got David says, do you guys think that the way this defense has been playing all season and everyone's saying they're terrible, does that affect how the players play on the field? Maybe we can get Coach Hyde to give these guys a pep talk before the game next week against the Huskies and get them fired up. Love the show. Continue to do the good job you and your staff are doing. God bless and fight on from David. You want to give a pep talk, Coach?
No, I don't need to give a pep talk. I think the kids play hard, okay? I really believe they come ready to play. I think they want to win badly. They don't want to walk out of their house on Sunday and go hide somewhere or go to their parents' house rather than go to the fraternity house or be around their friends so they can think about it and they can hear what a great game it was. It becomes difficult for a kid to go to class or read the newspaper or listen to this podcast. And I think it's not fair for them. They're playing hard, but you got to be able to assist them in making their dream and the university's dream and the football program's dream what becomes a real, what you call, first-class program on and off the field. And that's everything, that the way you dress, the way you travel, the way you get on the bus, the way you get off the bus, the way people see you in the store, the way people look at you and they say, that's really a great young man. He said hi to me when I said, how you doing, Caleb? And he said, nice, how are you today? Well, have a great day. I hope you have a better day. This type of communication with people make fans love the football team on and off the field. Sometimes even without the record being a great one.
All right, we got one last one. Jack in New Jersey. It's bad enough that USC has the same record last week as Rutgers, but today USC is ranked below James Madison. Really? I know, Ryan, you say the AP poll means nothing, and I agree with you to a point. Recruits see the rankings, and that does matter. Recruits do not give a crap about rankings. They watch games. They don't even know who wins. So don't equate what you think is important to what recruits think is important, because they're not looking and saying, oh, James Madison's ranked higher than USC, so I'm going to go there. That is not true at all. Anyway, he says, my question is for Coach Hyde. Is Coach Grinch's defensive scheme too complicated for college players, or is it just so bad that it doesn't make any sense and adjustments can't even be made? No Trojan fan can be happy today with a 7-2 record, knowing what looms ahead. Jack in New Jersey.
Well, you know, sometimes you can give kids too much, because when teams change their offensive formations or go to Wildcat or do different things, they can adjust to it. It takes them, you know, they come out in a hurry and line up and try to confuse you. And I see SC at times confused. You see the defensive backs raising their hands, over here, over here, over here, or whatever, instead of an immediate recognition of what's going on, or the linebackers telling everybody what's going on, or whatever. So, you know, you're better to stay base in some situations with some blitzes and stunts and so on, that everybody understands their assignments, rather than trying to fool somebody. You beat somebody on the line of scrimmage, you know? And I've found that to be true at times. I'm telling them or asking them in my past to do more than what they're capable of doing as far as mentally. And when you have a breakdown, all of a sudden you have 6 points, just like those two runs that I did at Cal, or a breakdown in the secondary, or whatever. You can't afford to have a breakdown, and that's because if it's not athletic ability, it's because they can't perform what you ask them to do.
All right, Coach. Well, great stuff. We really appreciate you coming on, sharing all the insights, and thanks to everyone for the great questions. A lot of awesome statements, questions, text, emails, voicemails, all of it. And Coach, thanks for going through them all. I know it was a little long, but we appreciate you sticking around. So thank you very much for that.
Well, thank you, Ryan. And again, I want to welcome everybody to our podcast each week. We appreciate you, because without you, we don't have a podcast. So again, thank you very much. And remember, you can listen to me Sunday mornings if you want an early edition. I don't have as much time, but it's on AM 830 here in Southern California. That's KLAA. It's College Football Review and Preview Show. Chuck Hayes and I are with you normally every Sunday. And Ryan, I'm always with you every week, Monday normally.
Yeah, we love it, Coach. Love being able to talk to you after games. So that is the Coach Harvey Hyde. I am Ryan Abraham. Hope you guys all enjoyed the show, and we will talk to you next time.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast, presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. Don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your smartphone or tablet for free. Just click the iTunes link on peristylepodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe? Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.